This is Elodie Reed, digital producer for Vermont Public Radio. This podcast has been edited for brevity and clarity.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Bob Kinzel. It's been a very challenging time for many people in the past 7 weeks, as we've all had to adapt to the many things dealing with the spread of the coronavirus. Things are so different, it's almost hard to remember what normal is, and almost impossible to predict when it might return. Now, through all of this, some people have done remarkably well. They've taken these challenges in stride. They're performing acts of kindness for their family, friends, neighbors, and even for people who are total strangers. Some famous person once said that we learn much more about people in challenging times than we do when everything is going really well. Well, joining me this hour is VPR's Morning Edition host, Mitch Wortlieb. Mitch, great to have you back.
It's great to be with you, Bob, as always.
Mitch, it's been 6.5 weeks now that the stay-at-home, stay-safe order has been put into place by Governor Phil Scott. Would you say that you're kind of slowly adjusting to it now?
Did you say 6.5 weeks or 6.5 months? I'm trying to get a handle on that. I am doing as well as can be expected, Bob. I think I have ups and downs like everybody else. And I was listening to your introduction there, and I agree. I think that for some people, it is easier than others. But I think even for people who are, committing those random acts of kindness, if you will, and getting out there and, you know, from a safe distance, helping out their friends and neighbors, I think that it's still trying. No matter how mentally strong you are or how centered you feel, this is so very different. And to me, 6.5 weeks does feel like it's 6.5 months. I was actually just emailing with someone who I had interviewed not long ago, trying to remember when we actually first spoke. And it was difficult to do. Time has kind of stretched and lost its original meaning in a way. So I think this is a really challenging time for a lot of people. You and I have been talking mostly on Fridays. Today is a Tuesday, but I'm not sure I can really tell the difference, to be quite honest with you at this point.
I've heard that from a lot of people, Mitch, that they've totally forgotten what day of the week it is. Just for that reason. Is it Tuesday? Is it Wednesday? Where am I here? You mentioned sort of up and down, good days, bad days. I've got to believe that lots of folks are feeling that way. And if you are, give us a call and talk to us about it at 1-800-639-2211. I know Mitch, in talking to some of my neighbors over the weekend, keeping our social distancing, they talked about the good days, bad days quite a bit. Mm. And, the good days where they felt, okay, I got this. I can deal with it. I've got a lot of challenges today. There's a to-do list. I'm going to go after all of it. And then there's some days where, is this thing ever going to end? A real lack of energy on their part. And those are difficult days to get through.
Yeah, they are difficult days to get through. And it's that blending. It's that feeling that every day is, that kind of Groundhog Day movie where it's feeling like it's the same. It's certainly different, I think, too, for people who may have lost their job, may have been furloughed, not sure when they're coming back. You and I are very fortunate to still, be working our jobs at VPR. And I think that makes a big difference for a lot of people. So, I want to send that message out there that we understand everyone has different circumstances. But the commonality in all of this is that time really has it's morphed in some very fundamental way that I don't think we're going to understand until we're on the other side of this, whenever that may be. And I certainly hope that it's sooner rather than later. But this different state approach is so interesting to me, too, Bob, about, we're hearing today about the state of California, which is the most populous state in the country, reopening a lot of things as of this Friday. And I do think that that's going to have an interesting effect on people in a state like Vermont, which, as you said, is taking a more cautious approach to slowly opening things up. And I wonder how that is going to affect people going forward.
Let's turn to Tony, who's calling from Barrie. Hi, Tony. Welcome to the program.
How are you guys doing today?
We're okay.
I just want to bring up speed. I called a couple weeks ago because we're going to start this movie review club online.
Yeah. How's it going?
And we were going to we're on our – we'll be doing our third movie this weekend.
Okay.
Our first movie was the Ghost Story.
Yep.
And you mentioned – I never heard of that. movie. I didn't either. And I watched it. We have a list of questions. We call into a Zoom on the weekend, and I figured the call is going to be like 5-10 minutes, and it turned out to be an hour.
Wow.
And it was great, but I pushed it back to about 5 o'clock because they want to have a glass of wine during the Zoom call.
Yeah.
And I said, I can't really do that at 12:30 in the afternoon. So our second movie was The Laundromat, starring Meryl Streep. And it was about the shell game in, remember the Panama Papers?
Yeah, sure.
Where all the rich people were.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a story about that. And one of the questions that was sent to us after we watched the movie is, you know, how effective did they break down the fourth wall in the movie? And the fourth wall is when the character talks to the audience.
Right.
And Gary Oldman and Antonio Banderas and Meryl Streep, again, was in it. And it was a great movie. It kind of made me angry about how people were hiding their money,
mm-hmm.
not paying taxes, but it was very entertaining. And again, that call went on for about an hour and a half.
Wow.
And our next movie this weekend is The 20th Century Woman. And it stars Annette Bening, 1979 single mother, who's raising a 16-year-old son. It's a comedy drama, so we'll see how it goes.
You're picking some interesting movies, Tony. I've noticed, you know, these are not like mainstream big blockbuster films.
You know, everyone on in our group gets a chance to pick a movie.
Hmm.
And so it's just not me picking all the movies. And so the first two movies I would never have watched. Now that I've watched them, I'm like, wow, I really missed out. But it gives us a connection to talk, because I miss going to the movies.
Yeah.
I miss going to the coffee shop afterwards.
That is one of the things I miss most too, Tony. I'm curious about how many people are on that Zoom call when you do get together and talk about the movie after. How many folks do you have joining?
Well, that's the funny. More and more people want to join us. So, you know,
people have time on their hands.
So we have to have a moderator now, kind of make sure everyone gets their question and their chance to answer. So we have about 6 people, and we have more people wanting to join. So
I love the idea. Well, I said it when you first called. I think it's a great idea.
Great idea, Tony. Thanks for letting us know how you're connecting with folks. Let's talk to Gloria, who is calling from Starksboro. Hi, Gloria. Welcome to the program.
Yes, thank you. Yes, so I just wanted to call and just state the fact of how much I do really appreciate, you know, the continue of us keeping everyone in their homes and things of that nature. So I do have a compromised immune system. So I was listening previously in the fact that California was starting to reopen, you know, some things. And I personally don't think that's a great idea, just because with people with compromised immune systems, with the weather getting better, people are going to start going out more. But especially from a Vermont standpoint and myself, I do really appreciate the fact that, you know, Vermont is still taking those extreme precautions. Especially because if they didn't, I think it would be a lot worse than what it is right now. So I just wanted to call and express my appreciation for the fact that Vermont is still taking it very seriously, which I think they should.
Gloria, do you think it will your mindset might change at all if you start seeing sort of, you know, images out of California of people on beaches or people in cafes, you know, enjoying themselves? Do you think that might make you feel a little antsy, you know, even though, given the fact you have told us you do have a situation where you yourself have to be extra cautious?
Mm-hmm. I don't think it would change my standpoint, because I think those people, I don't want to say those people, but I do think that some people are just like, oh, well, this won't affect me. So, you know, I can go out and do these things and enjoy the sunshine and enjoy my life, but they can also contract it and bring it back home or bring it to their friends. And then it could easily affect their family or their friend's family, and then that's how these things spread.
Yeah.
So I honestly think that Vermont is taking a very great stance on just keeping control of what's happening, and I don't think people really realize that.
The other part of it, of course, is the economic argument, Gloria, and I'm wondering if you feel if somebody said to you, well, okay, that's well and good for you, but, you know, I've lost my job, or I need to get back to work, I'm having trouble paying the bills, you know, we need to open up, because there is that other side of that argument, and I'm wondering what your response would be to that.
I can completely understand that, and honestly, I can feel a lot of empathy for those people. But there are a ton of grants out there that they can take advantage of. Honestly, my father, he just got the PPP grant for mm-hmm. his business. So if you really push and you take advantage of those grants that are within our state and across the country, I do understand that there are a lot of people that are struggling, but there are so many benefits and so many grants that are out there right now that I feel like a lot of people aren't really, really pushing for as much as they could.
Yeah,
so
we heard.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, not at all. I just wanted to mention that the things you're talking about are a lot what Congressman Peter Welch was just talking about with Bob before. You know, there are things available for Vermonters, small business owners, or what have you, to help at this time. And I'm glad to hear that, you know, you're pleased with what the state is doing to this point, Gloria, and thank you for the call.
Yeah, Gloria, thank you very much. You know, Mitch, you raised a really important point there. As states look at reopening their economies and at the same time doing more testing and more tracing, the CDC was out with a report today saying as states open up, they would expect the number of deaths across the country to probably double by June 1st. And some people would say, well, that's a result of reopening the economy. Other people would say, well, those cases were already out there, and so that's actually not an accurate way of looking at it. But it's an issue that I noticed that New York Governor Andrew Cuomo has been addressing in the last 24 hours of talking about what are the new estimates and what's reasonable to expect and accept and what isn't.
Yeah, I think that's an amazing point. We heard a clip from Governor Cuomo during the newscast just before, and he asked the question, what is a human life worth? And, you know, that's a very stark question to ask, but it's an important question to ask because you're starting to hear more people appearing on, you know, cable news, TV shows and what have you. And quite frankly, it's a little bit frightening in some ways to hear some people saying things like, well, there's going to be more deaths. You just have to accept that. I'm not sure that necessarily that's true. Maybe other people have a different feeling about that, that this is inevitable, that these deaths are going to happen and the economy is too important. But I do think that it's important to step back and ask the question that Governor Cuomo was asking, what is a human life worth as we go forward with this?
You know, one thing, Mitch, that I've been doing more in the last 6 or 7 weeks is I've been reading a lot more. I find myself at nighttime not really interested in following national news because I've been following it all day long, so I really don't need to do it at night. And sometimes putting things in perspective is a really interesting way of looking at it. And just by chance, I picked up this book. It's called The Splendid and the Vile, written by Eric Anderson. And it's a story of how Winston Churchill prepared the British people for a possible invasion by Hitler. And it starts in May of 1940. And the book really chronicles the next year, just until May of 1941. And there's a period there where the people in England know that the air attacks are going to be coming. It's just a matter of when. Is it going to be in a week? Is it going to be in 2 weeks? And in reading that and trying to imagine placing yourself in England at that time, when what you're thinking about is aircraft dropping multiple bombs on London and other parts of England, you know, that seems like a lot for any person to have to deal with. And I sort of scratched my head and said, you know, social distancing is difficult. I'm wearing a mask everywhere. Yes, we all are dealing with some difficult problems, but boy, nothing like that.
Yeah, I'm sort of glad you brought that up, Bob, because I've been looking backwards as well. At first, I didn't think I was going to want to read anything that dealt with past pandemics, things like the 1918 flu, for example. And, you know, going even further back into the 1600s, you know, Shakespeare wrote some of his best work because he was in quarantine and he had a lot of time to write. And it, you know, I thought, oh, I don't want to read that stuff. But actually, it did help put things in perspective. And when you talk about World War II and those Churchill years, you are picturing people that had to go underground to the tube, you know, and the bombs are dropping. The city is literally crumbling around them. And there were people that were trying to still sip their tea and keep life normal during those times. And it is extraordinary what the people of London went through, what they had to live through. If I'm not mistaken, that was when the phrase keep calm and carry on was created. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so, yeah, you have to look at that in perspective and what courage and what mettle those people showed. At the same time, the difference there is you knew the enemy. You saw who they – you knew who they were. You knew exactly what they were going to be doing. And as difficult and as horrible as that bombing was, it was not an unseen enemy. And I think that's the problem we're dealing with here. This is not a human enemy. This is not someone that we can identify. It's this virus that knows nothing, that has no brain, that has no agenda except to replicate itself. And I think that's what makes this so challenging as compared to the situation that folks in London were going through or around Great Britain during World War II.
Mitch, we've got a lot of folks who would like to talk to us today. So let's start off with Kat calling from Winooski. Hi, Kat. Welcome to the program.
Hey, good afternoon.
Hi, Kat.
Hi.
And what's on your mind
today? I wanted to share a couple three different things that I've been doing to cope during the pandemic. I am a musician, so I'm out of work right now. Two of those things that I've been digging into are music related. The first one is this really cool app. It's called Radio, but it has five O's on the end. And what it allows you to do is to, it shows you a map of the world, and you can click on any country in the world, and you can also click on a decade. And then you can decide what kind of music you'd like to listen to from that place and from that time. And you can, there's different options. So you can choose fast, slow, weird, or taxi. So you can kind of, you know, go in these different moods, and all over the world, you can choose music from any country. And it's an incredible way to discover stuff that you never would have heard. There's also a really cool feature on the app that allows you to listen to, old vinyl and 45. So it's just this wealth of really beautiful stuff that I never would have found.
And this is Radio on with five O's. I'm sorry, Kat. It's Radio with, like,
yeah,
you said. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, it's like Radio. and another thing that I've been loving to do to discover new music during this time while I'm doing all this stuff at home, like cooking and cleaning and organizing, is finding artists that I love on Spotify and seeing if those artists have any playlists that they have put together, and mm-hmm. then listening to those playlists and then letting the algorithm take you on a crazy journey through stuff that it decides that you might like based on the things that this other artist likes. So it's just another way to generate connections with stuff that you've never heard of, and it's really fun and really cool. One artist, a really good starting point, there's this really wonderful band that I love called Krungbin. And they have made all these beautiful playlists on their Spotify. You can click on one, listen to the playlist, and then just let Spotify and the algorithms, like, take you on a total journey. And it's really cool.
Wow.
The third thing is also just via Spotify, and it's listening to meditation podcasts. I think all of us have time right now if we're privileged enough to be healthy and be at home sheltering. And I never have made enough time in my life to do as much meditation as I would like to. And there are so many good resources out there for meditation and for centering and for being calm. One that I love is by a Buddhist teacher in the D.C. area. Her name is Tara Brock. And she's doing a lot of wonderful classes about, sheltering in place and how to feel in these times of pandemic, and then they're followed up with these wonderful, like, 10-15 minute guided meditations. So if you've never meditated and you've wanted to, look up guided meditations and just a wonderful way to get through a day.
Those are all great suggestions. And Kat, if you don't want to say your last name, I think I know who you are. I miss your voice so much. I miss your music so much. And your band, because you're a wonderful musician. And I really do appreciate you sharing some of those ideas with us. And the name of the band that you discovered, Krungbin, I think you said it was?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
They're terrific. I discovered that band by watching a show called Lodge 49 on TV, which sadly they canceled it. But the music that I was hearing during that show was so amazing that I looked it up and I found that band. And now I play some of their music interstitially in the morning during Morning Edition because I just think they're wonderful. Such great ambient sounds.
Kat, thank you very much for your phone call. We really appreciate it. Let's talk to Steve, who's calling from Fairfax. Hey, Steve, what's on your mind today?
Hello, gentlemen. Thank you so much for having me on the program.
Sure.
A few things on my mind today. Number one, keep my sanity. My wife and I are exercising, and our personal trainer, she's here. She keeps her distance. She just finished a workout with us, and it went really well. The exercise is a remarkable way to maintain your health, but also maintain your mental health as well. The other thing that I've been doing to take advantage of the fact that we're in a pandemic is things around the house that should have been done 30 years ago. There's a section of the woods and near the road that I've wanted to clean out for 30 years and finally took 2 days, but finally did it. Hmm. And straightening out the basement, that kind of stuff. The other thing that is very interesting to me is why I'm so proud to be a Vermonter is because of the actions of our state and our governor. My wife read to me an article today from the Atlantic magazine that compared the rights of the individual versus the rights of society. And so society rights takes precedent. The example that the Atlantic magazine read was the individual slave owners before the Civil War expressed the right to keep their slaves. But society, including the slaves, that was the wrong thing to do, but hence the Civil War.
Yeah, sort of an us versus me sort of mindset there, yeah. That's right, Steve. Thanks.
You know, Mitch, I got to say, following Steve's advice, if I had to pick one thing that has helped me get through, reading would probably be number two, as we were just discussing. Mm. But just for me personally, it is exercising. It's a thing that I do more for mental stress relief than I do to say, oh, my body physically is in good shape. It's the effect on my brain is really very, very good. And I can tell the days that I've worked out and the days that I haven't. You know, you can feel it. You can just feel the way that your body is dealing with tension and stress. Glad to hear somebody else, Steve, in Fairfax, also finding that exercise is a good way to deal with some of the stress of life. Let's talk to Susan, who's calling from Cambridge. Hi, Susan. Welcome to the program.
Hi, thank you. I really thought those suggestions were great, so I appreciate that. I just want to say that I think if we all want to get out and, you know, out of our homes and start going to businesses and all that, I totally agree with that. I'm for that. But I think one of the things that will prevent us from doing that is if people are going out and not having masks and not even bringing gloves and sanitizers. I think that is one of the most important things we need to do. And I think, unfortunately, people aren't in the habit of doing that. Of course not. But they need to get in the habit. And if you don't have a mask, you can easily make one or rig up something out of, you know, old T-shirt or pajamas or whatever. I mean, I think it's just really important that you have it with you. Leave the stuff in your car maybe or whatever, in your bag. And if you're driving by somewhere and you see, oh, that store's open, I want to go in there, and, you know, you don't have a mask with you, then, you know, you're setting things up to possibly infect other people. It's just really important. I think maybe the state is not doing enough to really drive that point home. I know wearing a mask is not a cure-all, but I think it's probably one of the biggest things that will help this state open up sooner if everybody just wears them because they do save lives.
I think that health officials would agree with you, Susan. I'm pretty confident that they would. That is exactly what they would recommend.
And Susan and Mitch, I have got to say that last weekend when I went to a supermarket and also to a drugstore, I think every employee at both places was wearing a mask, and virtually every consumer in the store was wearing a mask. And this is kind of in contrast to what I saw maybe 2 or 3 weeks ago when some employees were not wearing masks, and I'd say about 50% of the customers were not wearing masks. It seems like this message, Mitch, is starting to get through to folks.
Yeah, and I think it takes a while. I think that's just exactly as you described it, Bob. It ramps up a little bit and people start realizing how important it is over time. I do hope that, as Susan says, this becomes something that's much more common, that you know, you don't even think about leaving your house without a mask because, again, you're not so much protecting yourself as you're protecting others. That's what health officials will tell you. It's about, you know, your droplets and the things that you're doing when you speak or, you know, breathe heavily or what have you. And again, it's just the least we can do. And yet it could make such a huge difference.
Let's talk to Ralph, who's calling from Brattleboro. Hi, Ralph. Welcome to the program.
Thank you very much. Nice to hear your voices. I'm a loyal VPR listener.
Thank you.
Wow, great to have you.
Thank you. I just wanted to share a thought I've been wondering about. I'm doing fine. I'm very happy with the way Vermont is handling it, especially our governor. I'm holed up in an old house here in Brattleboro with my wife, 4 kids, 4 cats, and a dog, and none of us have killed anybody else yet within this tight little household yet, so we're happy with it. But you know, I'm just thinking back to what Governor Cuomo was saying earlier about there being a pretty stark trade-off between lives and economic activity. Yeah. And where, you know, if you turn up the volume on the economic activity, you're gonna almost immediately begin to see an increase in infection rates, deaths, and all of the burdens on the healthcare system and related systems that go along with that. It's a trade-off, and you know what it's very similar to? It's in the field of environmental economics. It's very similar to externalities, basically where some businesses, some organizations, you know, and certainly in many cases attempting to just assure their survival, want to see more activity, you know, restaurants full of customers and pro sports venues full of spectators and so forth. So they're deriving economic benefit from being able to open up and get the economy going, and that of course has its benefits for everybody. But I guess my question is, if certain businesses want to move faster, and you know as a result, indirectly cause more death and more disease and more disruption on that side of the court, so to speak. Why shouldn't they pay for it? I mean, otherwise, basically the public and all the poor people who get sick and die are picking up the tab for increased economic activity that may benefit some people disproportionately. So I guess the question I'd like to just put out there to everybody is, and this is not for Vermont, because I don't see a need for this in Vermont, but in the states with big beaches, big urban areas, huge service economies that require, you know, lots and lots of workers, lots and lots of customers, big shopping malls, department stores, and so forth. Why shouldn't there be a kind of a fee system where, sure enough, if you're going to ramp up your economic activity and benefit from it, why shouldn't you pay a little bit extra, which in turn would go toward, you know, footing the bill for
public health mitigation,
ambulance drivers and morticians and everybody else who will you know have to take the brunt of that.
I think that's a tough question, Ralph, and a good one. And I think it plays out in other ways, as you were alluding to, when you look at questions about things like climate change, for example. Before this pandemic hit, that was a big concern because people were saying, well, you know, we drive cars in this country and we fly planes and we need to use fossil fuels to do that. And it's a driver of economics, et cetera. At the same time, there are people who are saying, well, what good is all that economic activity going to do if you're destroying the very environment that we all have to live in? I don't know the answer to the question, but I think it's important that you put it out there. And I think that we're all going to be looking at Ralph's question very carefully over the next several months, perhaps even years.
Yes, Ralph, thanks very much for your comment today. Let's turn to John in Burlington. Hey, John, welcome to the program.
Hey, how you doing? So my what I'm curious about is that in February, the conversation was we're going to self-isolate to not overrun the healthcare system, which I totally support, totally agree with. But now I'm hearing callers and I'm hearing neighbors and people saying, I'm going to self-isolate because I don't want to get this virus. Well, my thing is, I mean, where is this virus going? It's not going to go away next month. It's not going to go away possibly until, you know, September of next year. So are we going to self-isolate for the next year and a half, or are we going to start getting back in motion and spreading the antibodies so people become resistant? I don't know the answer, quite honestly. Huh. But currently, I do know we're not set up to, you know, self-isolate for the next year and a half.
Wow, that's a tough one, John. I mean, you're posing a really big poser there because you're right. I think that this is not going to just go away. We could have a resurgence of it in the fall as the 1918 pandemic and the flu proved to be. They came roaring back in the fall after there was a bit of a lull in the summer. And, yeah, that's going to have to be the question. You know, do you look at something like herd immunity, which I think we discussed last week, Bob, in Sweden? They were trying mm-hmm. that sort of approach. There's no definite answer to this, but it's either going to be we all have to learn to deal with the self-isolation better, which is why we're talking about these strategies. Or are we going to try and say, okay, we're willing to let more people perhaps become immune to this or let it spread a little bit so the antibodies get out there? I am certainly not weighing in on either of those things, but I do know it's an in question that's we're all going to have to face at some point.
And I think, Mitch, one of the big decisions that the Scott administration has to make in the coming weeks, probably in the next week, will have to do with Memorial Day celebrations, mm-hmm. Whether or not that has to be with social distancing or can it be done with people closer together. And then we got the 4th of July coming around the corner. A lot of communities having very big events on the 4th of July with parades and picnics. How much of that is going to be allowed by the state of Vermont? So some very big decisions coming up for the Scott administration. Let's talk to Jenna, who is calling from Heartland. Hi, Jenna. Welcome to the program.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to share one thing that I'm doing to kind of keep myself busy during this time. I am a food photographer, and my sister is a chef, and we are both unemployed right now. So we are creating an e-cookbook together that we are going to sell online and donate all the proceeds to the Vermont Restaurant Strong Fund.
Oh, that's such a nice idea, Jenna. That's a wonderful idea. Go ahead. Keep going.
So local chefs and bartenders are contributing recipes, and then my sister is cooking them, and I'm photographing them, and we're putting it all into an e-cookbook that is going to be available online in the next week or so.
It occurs to me that this is the sort of thing that people were doing way, you know, pre-pandemic. People would take, like, you know, their iPhone out. They'd take a picture of a great burger they were having or something and, you know, put it online, mm-hmm. put it on Instagram, what have you. This seems to me like a much more purposeful and certainly a more beneficial effort because you are actually going to be helping out local restaurants. It's a wonderful idea. And what are some of the foods you might be shooting there, Jenna? What is your sister gonna cook up there? Because I'm kind of hungry.
So far,
right now.
it's been a really eclectic mix. We've had everything from Heath Bar cake to shellfish stew to breakfast sandwiches. Yesterday, I shot chicken schnitzel. So, like, really all across the map.
You had me at shellfish stew. Oh my gosh, it sounds so delicious. Wonderful idea.
Jenna, thanks very much for your phone call. Mitch, I don't know if this is happening to you, but all of a sudden, I noticed that chocolate chip cookies look really good at night. And I'm not a big dessert person. You know, I might have dessert once a week or twice a week at the most. But somehow, chocolate chip cookies have become an interesting comfort food for me.
Well, you're a more disciplined person than I am, Bob, because I will reach for those chocolate chip cookies way more often than that. Let me ask you this. Do you like the soft, chewy chocolate chip cookie, or are you more like a Chips Ahoy traditional hard chocolate chip cookie that you maybe dunk in the milk or something?
Oh, I like them bigger and softer, and I've been very lucky that I have a daughter at home who has been just cooking up cookies, just cooking up a storm. So there's no shortage of chocolate chip cookies in my household these days, and it's just, you know, comfort food. There it is. I know some people are thinking of pasta that way, other foods, you know, having meatloaf. Let's talk to Melinda, who is calling from Calais. Hi, Melinda. Welcome to the program.
Hi. Thanks for providing this forum for people.
Oh, you're quite welcome.
I wanted to talk a little bit about some things I do. One is I go and I look at trees. I walk around and I just look at them because I find them very inspiring because they have to self-isolate completely.
Hmm.
And despite that, they will grow to get to the light. And sometimes they take very unusual paths to get there. The other thing I do is I make masks. It makes me feel like I'm doing something. And I thought people might like to know about two places, two websites, where if they have a need for masks, you know, say maybe they're a small plumbing firm or maybe they're a clinic or just a neighbor, they can register what they need, how many, what type, and their contact information. And the two websites that they can do this at are, the first one is maskforhumanity.org, I believe. And then the other one is called We Need Masks.
Pretty straightforward. Yeah.
They're very easy to find, and they have state by state, you know, what organizations and people need masks. And then people like myself, who aren't really sure what the needs are, go on the website and look for, you know, organizations we can help.
Masks for Humanity and We Need Masks. Is that right, Melinda?
Yeah,
that's wonderful. And by the way, I love your analogy with the trees. You know, don't forget about the trees. I think that's exactly right. They do have to self-isolate, yet their roots reach far and wide underground, and they do reach towards the light. And I think we're all trying to find a little light during these pretty dark times right now. Thank you for that call.
And Mitch, I wanted to mention that I live in Montpelier, and we've had a really great neighborhood effort. Someone in the community getting the email addresses for everybody on the street. It's about 75 or 80 people, seeing if people need anything. I was walking in a different neighborhood over the weekend, and I saw a place where there were two huge bags, and they were full of masks.
Hmm.
And it just said, hey, do you need a mask? If you do, take one.
That's great.
I thought, wow, that's, you know, that was just a community spirit in a different neighborhood and folks taking it upon themselves to decide, hey, we're going to make up a bunch of masks and that way if someone's walking by and they don't have one, here's something that they can use as a way to protect other people. I thought it was really a remarkable thing to do.
That is a lovely thing to do. Wash it before you wear it. Take it home just to be safe. But I think it's fantastic that they put that out there. And again, it's amazing to me, people like Melinda and so many other folks that we've heard that have called in today who are doing these things so selflessly, you know. And, you know, maybe they do have extra time on their hands. Maybe they have been furloughed from work or what have you, and yet they're finding ways to help others. And I think that that's giving people a great sense of feeling and fulfillment.
Let's talk to John, who's calling from Williston. Hi, John. What's on your mind today?
Hello. So a few things. One, the first thing that triggered my phone call was when people speak about the economy, that all of us need to put in our minds that there's really two economies, and I'll refer to them as the capital E economy and the lowercase e economy. The lowercase e economy is the survival economy. You know, people need money to go get groceries, to get, you know, home heating fuel, gasoline, you know, the things to survive. You know, we don't need you know, these other things. And it points to the capital E economy that everybody talks about. Usually politicians talk about the economy and opening it up. The only – that's like stuff like stockholders should worry about, you know, abstract numbers. And all those things can be deferred and manipulated. The economy, the capital E economy, will bounce back organically. Hmm. We don't need to worry about it. What we need to really focus on is the survival of us, which as people die, you could forget about the economy, because what's one life worth if it's yours or your family's member? So for anybody to say, you know, the economy needs to open up, that's nonsense. The economy never really closed. It's an immature notion to imagine that you can close and open the economy like a grand opening. Both Inslee, Governor Inslee, and Governor Cuomo said, they refer to it as like turning a dial rather than turning a light switch. You know, it's immature to say that, you know, when's it going to reopen? It's never closed. It's changing, but it's not open or closed. Additionally, we talk about the, you know, how hard it is to be alone inside and all this other stuff. We are better equipped now than ever in history to deal with a pandemic. We have things like the internet. We have communication. The plague in the 1300s, those people didn't even know it was coming, and they were dying of it. We have science. We have medicine. We have the internet. We could phone chat. We're doing this right now.
Yeah.
We are better equipped than anybody. Additionally, people who say that boredom, that they're bored, that's an admission of their own lack of imagination, creativity, or curiosity.
Sounds like you've found a way to deal with this for sure, John. And I think, John, I think your point is really important. When I do hear, as I mentioned earlier in the show, when I hear pundits or people, former politicians or what have you, or even current politicians talking about the need to open up the economy, we need to get the economy back roaring. And my first thought is always, I'm always wondering, do you know someone who's died from this? Is there someone in your family that has died? And would you be saying the same thing if someone close to you came down with COVID-19 and was on a respirator and fighting for their lives? I just don't want us to lose sight of the fact that, you know, this is a deadly disease for a lot of people. Not for everyone, but for a lot of people it is. And what are we weighing here? What are we really weighing as a society and as individuals? And I think John's point really kind of strikes that home and puts it into stark relief for all of us.
Let's get a quick call in from George in Burlington. Hey, George, welcome to the program.
Hello. Good to talk to you. Thanks for taking my call. So
sure.
My wife and I have always thought about birding, and we like the outdoors, like to hike. But and so this time, because of the pandemic and trying to find some new things to do outside that are socially isolating, we've decided to, you know, get some apps on their phones and look up a couple books. And we've been going out with binoculars and just really, really enjoying it. And it's always been intimidating because there are so many birds out there and so many different calls and stuff. But we just decided to dive in, and it's just really been connecting with each other, connecting with nature at the same time. It's been wonderful.
That's a great idea. George, have you found any birds in particular that you've identified that have sort of really made you excited?
Well, as new birders, every bird that we look at, other than perhaps a crow or a cardinal, I mean, you know, there's the standard ones, cardinals and things like that. But the one that got me personally super excited is on the bike path. I've seen a couple kingfishers. I forget what they're called now. Belted kingfishers. And then last weekend we saw a killdeer. I'd never heard of a killdeer before. Saw a common merganser and a greater yellowlegs. Never heard of those birds before, and looked them up, and we're just excited to see them.
That sounds great. Looks like you're going to become a veteran birder before you know it, George. That sounds fantastic. Wonderful.
That sounds great, George. Mitch, like many of us at VPR, we've all developed home offices to use. And the other day I was looking out the window of my home office, and what did I see but a couple of cardinals? Well, what did that make me think about? Oh, baseball!
That's right. I was waiting.
And then I have some Blue Jays in the neighborhood, you know, so baseball just won't let go. You know, I was going to ask you one thing, Mitch, though.
Sure.
Of all the sports that might be able to reopen, is PGA golf. They can stay 6 feet away from each other.
Mm-hmm.
Then they're not going to have an audience. No fans at these golf courses, but they still think they can do it sort of for a made-for-TV production. Do you think that's crazy?
Well, I thought we were talking about sports, Bob. I just got every golfer so mad at me right now. Golf is not a sport. Golf is a good walk spoiled, as Mark Twain said. No, I'm joking. Golf is an extremely hard game to play. That's why I don't play it. Actually, I think, you know, that would work because, you know, when I once in a while will tune into a little bit of golf, you know, it's super quiet. Yeah, the people in the gallery are there. And you can see them in the crowd, but they're supposed to be quiet, too. So, you know, I would agree. If there's any sport that's going to come back, you know, I think golf would be the one to put on TV and go ahead. Bob, I want to very quickly ask you before we end the program, because there is sports being played now. And, you know, the Korean Baseball League is now playing live games in Korea. Are you going to watch?
I don't. Oh, that's a tough one, Mitch. You know, I probably would. That's something with if there are fans in the stands, I find I can watch almost any baseball game.
ESPN's going to be playing the games. They got some good players over in Korea. Just saying.
All right. Going to have to check it out. VPR's Mitch Wortley, many thanks for being on the program today.
My pleasure, Bob. Thank you so much.